Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every Tuesday at 9 o'clock, let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
I'm good. Just puddling around in the finally slowed down portion of the season. This has nothing to do with the appearance, but I can't get over this. So I was texting with an agent just about quarterbacks yesterday, and he brought up Chase Daniel and the fact that Chase Daniel's realized career earnings are nearly $38 million through last year, and he's played five NFL games.
Jeez.
Five games that count. So he said, he said it was a good year in 2009 for undrafted backup quarterbacks. So I go and I look, and Brian Hoyer from 2009, undrafted backup quarterback, same as Chase Daniel for the majority of his career. Brian Hoyer's realized nearly $30 million through the expanse of his career. Both will be playing in the league next year. It's a hell of a job if you can get a backup quarterback job. And hang on, I'll tell you what. And this doesn't even take into account guys like Luke McCown and sort of stopgap starters who have just raked it over the years. But Chase Daniel, that's unbelievable. Five games, $38 million.
I mean, that's got to be like the best job in sports, right? Chase Daniel. Not having to do hardly anything, $38 million?
Maybe. Like, I don't know. You'd be hard pressed to find someone whose role really over 12 years really truly was a backup to be a supporter. You're in the quarterback room. You support the starter, and you're a stopgap measure in case anything happens. And I remember when the Eagles signed him in 2016, and the sort of idea behind it was, well, this is such a high level backup, and I'm kind of like looking at it, and I'm like, where did he prove it? He's never played in the regular season. Like, some of these guys get labeled high level backups, and clearly, I remember covering the Lions and Ty Detmer being, you know, this backup who really was never going to materialize into a starting quarterback for the Lions. When you talk to people in the locker room, you talk to people in the front office, they just talked about, you know, how great he was in the quarterback room, how great he was in the support role. It's just kind of weird how these guys can develop, really lucrative long-term careers just being in these support roles. But you're right. I mean, Chase Daniel, I'd have to look at it. I mean, this is definitely one of the crazier five game careers for nearly $38 million. And that's not even, you know, he'll be in the league in 2021 and probably beyond. I mean, he could be a guy who plays, you know, 15, 16 years as a backup.
And Joe, that means that you've seen in person one of Chase Daniel's five starts. He played last year against the Titans for the Lions.
That's right.
Well, that's a rare.
Boy, was he good too? He was awfully good. he was pretty special. I'm not going to hear any Brian Hoyer slander now, you know, but Brian Hoyer, he's earned his keep, you know, come on.
Now, now I'll say this for Hoyer. He did. I think I looked at Hoyer's played 39 games, and there were times where he was leaned upon as a starter here in Houston. A little bit of a different situation, but for the most part, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, we're going to look at Brian Hoyer as being someone that was a career backup, Chase Daniel being a career backup. I'd be curious to look at, I will say this, for all the talk about how starting quarterback salaries have ballooned, you know, backup quarterbacks are getting expensive in the NFL now. And that's why you see, like last year, part of the reason why the Eagles drafted Jalen Hurts was because they really couldn't afford to go out and sign a backup quarterback. I mean, there was a talk in that building about, look, we can go try to sign a high-level backup, which we will need because Carson Wentz has gotten hurt so much over the course of his career. But that's going to cost us $6, $7, $8 million to have a high-level backup quarterback who can start games for us. Or we can just go draft a guy who's going to be far cheaper and who might develop into something that maybe we can trade down the line. Because, look, at the time, they thought they were still going to keep Carson Wentz. Well, obviously, things go differently. But that's why the Jalen Hurts situation developed in Philadelphia was because they couldn't afford, they didn't feel like, you know, salary-wise, they could afford a high-level backup who would come for 1 year on a contract really they felt like they could fit into their salary cap situation. So that's if you look at Jalen Hurts on the field this year and you're like, how did this guy end up starting? It was because they were trying to save some money on a backup quarterback situation, just went a completely different way.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Charles, I feel like every time we have you on now, somehow the conversation turns to Urban Meyer and to the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I want to talk to you about that again, because now minicamp, rookie minicamp has come and gone, and Travis Etienne selected by the Jags in the first round, apparently taking all his reps over the weekend at wide receiver. And Urban Meyer went on a radio show as well, talked about how Travis Etienne could be the next Percy Harvin. What do you think about all this? What do you think about selecting him in the first round, and then all of a sudden he's changing positions at the rookie minicamp?
Well, I hope he's not the next Percy Harvin, because, I mean, no offense to Percy Harvin, but that's someone that, you know, didn't really, I think, realize what we all thought, you know, he could be in the NFL. And you could say that's because of injuries and, you know, obviously there were concussion issues with Percy Harvin and, you know, a number of different things. But I don't know. It's uncharacteristic for most NFL coaches to look at an elite level 5'10", 210-pound running back and go, yeah, you know what, let's figure out a way to, you know, use this guy as a wide receiver. You know, here's my thing with Urban, and I think I talked about this before, is just this idea of culture coaches coming out of college and, you know, first off, going and grabbing for familiarity, going and grabbing for a number of guys that, you know, in their minds, whether you want to talk about Tim Tebow or, you know, other moves that Urban Meyer's made there. But, I mean, even leaning on Percy Harvin. Okay, well, guess what? Percy Harvin was a far greater player in college for an Urban Meyer than he ever was in the NFL. You know, he was never a fit guy in the NFL. There were a lot of problems, you know, with Percy Harvin from a skill standpoint. And the NFL is not a league of tweeners. Like, we're not looking – when you talk to front offices, they're not looking for players that are hard, you know, to fit into certain positions. And okay, look at this last draft. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, right? J-O-K, the kid from Notre Dame. Teams, everybody I talked to really liked him a lot. Like, they, you know, someone said, hey, maybe this film's a little overrated, but – you know, they really loved the skill set he brought to the table, the speed, you know, the way he hit, all these things. But they all said a lot of the same things that they used to say about Jabril Peppers when he came out of Michigan, which was, where do you put him? Like, is he a safety? Is he a linebacker? You know, are we at the point now in the NFL where we can truly have sort of these hybrid middle tier, you know, tweener players on defense like this and succeed with them? Or is it just too much finessing to try and figure out, you know, where a guy fits? You don't want Travis Etienne in that position. You know, there's no team that I talk to who's like, yeah, we're going to switch that guy to wide receiver. And I feel like Urban is making himself into a story because he's trying to reinvent the wheel right off the bat. And this is part of Urban, okay? There's no room that Urban's ever been in. And you can like him, you can hate him, you say whatever you want. But Urban is the guy who always feels like, hey, I'm smarter than anybody else in this room. And that's fine, because he's had a lot of success on the college level. But that'll get you in trouble fast in the NFL, particularly when you think, hey, I can come in and go against the grain and start to, you know, take certain players and put them, you know, I'll bring in a Tim Tebow and think that that's not going to become a problem with the politics of a locker room in the NFL. Like, it was, forget the fact, you know, you're switching him to tight end, but what about the politics of the locker room, where there are guys in there who immediately are forming opinions going, are you serious? Like, you know, this, they know what kind of a player Tim Tebow is. They know about the gap in time. They know about, you know, you can say whatever you want about the roster spot that he's taking, whether it's the 90th guy or not. But they do have a need at tight end, and they do see a guy reaching for familiarity, which, you know, develops thoughts of players in the locker room. So this is another thing where you're switching an elite-level player, and I guarantee you there are guys in that locker room who are probably looking at him going, I don't know why we're doing this. Like, why are you taking a running back who's, you know, clearly got the skill set to play that position, played it at a high level, played against high-level competition, and killed high-level competition there, and now you're trying to put him into this position to make him into some other player that you were familiar with? That just doesn't make a lot of sense. So I hope Urban gets off to a fast start, because he sure as heck is fiddling with things that could come back to haunt him. And I will say that with a grain of salt, because it is, let's not go overboard here, it is May. You know, it is, we're at a time of the year where a lot of the stuff that's happening right now really truly doesn't matter. But if we get into training camp and Travis Etienne's a wide receiver, yeah, I don't know about that. I don't know about drafting him where you draft him just to change him into some other position at which there's more to it than you don't see a lot of lifelong running backs all of a sudden, hey, we're just going to throw you in a wide receiver spot and let's see if you can swim, learning a route tree and all the other, you know, things that you have to learn as a wide receiver.
Yeah, what was your tweet? Hey, let's try Trevor Lawrence at right guard next.
I mean, you know, I'm being a jerk.
Something like that.
That's who I am. That's who I am on Twitter. But I mean, like, it's I don't know. It's just, again, I think it's just because you, particularly when you cover the league for a really long time, and you get individuals, like I said, who come in, particularly from college, and there's always this sort of, there's always a little bit of arrogance there, because, you know, I think they're coming in wanting to, you know, do things and establish the culture the way that they did it and the way that they were successful in college. And that can work, absolutely, sometimes. But, you know, I don't know, the NFL, it's just, I think a lot of, there's this transition from college to the NFL where, particularly inside the locker rooms, the politics of power are completely different in the NFL than they are in college. In college, if you don't like how a player's performing, you bench them. If they're not fitting in your program, you figure out a way to get them into the transfer portal, or you just let them know that, hey, you're not going to play here, and if you want to get out, you need to get out. You come to the NFL, you're tied to guys financially. There are people with families. They're trying to, you know, hang on and make livings. And the things that you do, you can't rub even one player the wrong way and expect that not to have reverberations. And you know what? This is an off season where I think we've learned that a little bit about, you know, you got to be real careful with some of the tinkering that you do inside your locker room, because it can screw up the chemistry pretty fast. And don't piss off the wrong player, because guys like Deshaun Watson, which, look, obviously that broke differently for Watson than he thought, but there were a couple months ago where everybody was on Deshaun Watson's side in that whole mess. Aaron Rodgers, I mean, some of these people are talking about quarterbacks right now for a reason, because I think a lot of these quarterbacks are starting to make $35, $40 million a year, and they're going, you know what? I don't have to sit here and just like it anymore. I can impress myself upon the situation and actually have to be heard because of financially where I sit now. And that's something the NFL has always approached as the quarterback salaries have started to balloon.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. Charles joins us every Tuesday at 9 o'clock here on the show. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. When we come back, we'll react a little bit to what Charles had to say there. And look at Urban Meyer in Jacksonville as well. Is this going to be as big of a disaster as it seems to look like right now? We'll talk about that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. This Friday, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick to Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game this Sunday night, you win a prize pack and a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Your next chance to participate coming up on Friday morning at 9:45. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Taking your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Now, Joe, we brought this story up in the last segment with Charles. Travis Etienne selected by the Jaguars in the first round, their first pick after selecting Trevor Lawrence. And obviously, teammates at Clemson, Etienne was a great running back at Clemson, very productive during his time there. And over the weekend, mini camp has come and gone. and Etienne taking his reps at the wide receiver position in Jacksonville. What do you think of that? And look, I guess I understand when you hear Urban Meyer kind of talk about it a little bit, having Etienne play a bunch of different roles. He'll still line up in the backfield at times, but just wanting to get him on the field and play maybe in the slot as well, like Percy Harvin used to do. I mean, I suppose I can understand wanting to get a playmaker like Etienne on the field as much as you can, especially when you have James Robinson in the backfield as well. But to me, like coming in, drafting him in the first round, and then maybe potentially changing his position seems like a move that can end up in disaster.
Yeah, like if he comes in and either they try to switch him and it doesn't work out, or he just he's a split time at best with Robinson at running back, then I think you look at that pick and say, man, you could have done a lot of different things there. But I'm a little bit hesitant to, as much as I think Urban has done some real dumb things, this one to me reads, especially if you like read his comments from minicamp. I mean, he said, like, look, we know what he can do on the ground. Why not give it a look in May? And so I don't know that this is going to be there's a lot of fantasy out there, I think, about Urban Meyer being a complete train wreck as an NFL coach. And, hey, if that's the case, it'll be entertainment for all. I'm still dubious of that, because he is a good coach. He's a smart guy. And so I'm keeping an open mind on the ATN thing. Like Charles said, like if they go into camp and that's where he's repping strictly, then it's like, yeah, that's a weird pick, 25 overall for that.
Yeah.
But I have my doubts that'll be the case. And look, he is a good weapon. I mean, it's basically it's like the opposite of Harvin. Harvin obviously was a receiver, and Urban came up with all these different ways to get him the ball. I mean, that was like when Harvin was in college, that was like some of the first times any of us had ever seen something called a jet sweep. Like a jet sweep? Yeah. What is a jet sweep? Percy Harvin is one of the first guys in college in football history to be a steady diet guy on that. And they'd line him up straight up in the backfield and just hand off to him at times. They'd move him all over the place. They wanted the ball in his hand. So now you got the running back who you're trying to do more in the slot and things like that. Hey, some of the best running backs in this league, as we know, do both very well at a high level. And ATN's production as a pass receiver significantly upticked throughout his career at Clemson. So I know people looking at this and saying, oh, Urban, and people are going to jump on everything. And they should jump more on like the strength coach thing, the Tebow thing. I mean, I thought Charles made a great point about that. If you're in that locker room, you're like, really? Tebow, really? But I don't really have an issue with giving this a strong look, because if you've got a guy who can do both very well, then to me that justifies taking him at 25.
Let's go back to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben text in, Urban Meyer isn't going to change his ways, so it just depends on how long Trevor Lawrence can keep him his job. If Urban keeps doing crazy stuff, maybe the Titans should try to trade Kevin Byard for Trevor Lawrence. I don't think that's going to work.
Okay, yeah, we're not talking about Bill O'Brien here. We're talking about Urban
Meyer.
Yet. So, yeah. Now, Bill O'Brien might make that trade.
Yes. I don't know. Does Urban have that much power yet in Jacksonville? Is that the way this thing's going to trend? I would think not.
I don't know. His dumb strength coach idea got slam dunked, so maybe not yet.
That is true. I mean, it's going to be interesting. Like to Charles's point, talking about how Urban better have a strong start. I mean, they do open up the season with Houston, so you talk about an opportunity to have a strong start if you're Urban Meyer. Might be able to win that first game, because I look at this Houston team, and my goodness, is that roster. It is rough. The quarterback situation right now, obviously, with Deshaun Watson's situation, I don't know what that's going to look like. They look like a team that could be pretty, pretty bad this season.
Yeah, like, Tyrod Taylor, if he's the quarterback, yeah, I mean, it's a 3-13 team, right? Something like that. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
a 3-14 team. Oh, I'll give him 4-13.
Okay.
I'll give him 4-13. But again, we got to have Aaron Reese on at some point. Our Texans writer who picked the Jags to finish higher than the Titans in the division. Yeah. Like, I got to hear this. I got to hear this.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joey from Gallatin texting in. Alvin Kamara has done well in the running back slash receiver role. I don't think there's any question. He has.
Of course. Christian McCaffrey.
Yep.
You know, I mean, and I mean, look, that's, I mean, that's right now. And Le'Veon Bell, obviously, I think, changed the position a little bit with what he did a few years ago in Pittsburgh. So, I have no – working on that stuff, trying to hone your route running abilities, all that, that's great. I mean, if you're just going to use him in the slot, then to me it's like, boy, I think you maybe could have gotten – like you could have gotten like Elijah Campbell or something, yeah. You know, Rondale Moore, for crying out loud. rather than go with a running back, you're going to switch to a slot. But I have my – I think Travis Etienne is going to get plenty of carries too.
When we come back, we'll get back into the Nashville Predators. A tough loss in Game 1. Did the Game 1 loss change how you feel about this series against Carolina? We'll discuss that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How do you balance not panicking but knowing you got to do more?
Well, it's a long series. I think panic is not a very good word right now. I don't sense any panic in our game. We're a confident group. We've gone through some adversity this season, and so I'm very confident that we're gonna bounce back and have a really good game on Wednesday.
That was Predators forward Eric Halla after the game last night discussing the loss, a 5-2 loss for the Predators in Game 1 against the Carolina Hurricanes. They're back at it tomorrow in Game 2 to try to even up this series, and we'll see whether or not they're able to make some adjustments and do that. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Joe, the interesting part was in the game last night, I thought in the first period, the Predators played pretty well in the first period. I thought it was an even period for the most part. Forsberg scores first. You're up 1-0. And then Teravainen makes a great play where I think you just got to tip your cap to him on that play. He ties the game, a great redirection. It's 1-1 at that point. But all in all, I thought if you're the Predators, you had to feel pretty good about the way you played in the first period and about the result heading into the second period. And then you come out in the second period and you go basically 8 minutes and you don't have a shot on goal, and Carolina starts to change the momentum around a little bit. Jordan Staal makes a great play. Eric Halla ties it up at 2 heading into the third, and then the wheels come off in the third period, and Carolina was just dominant. They started the game well, and it just looked like as that game went along, Carolina wore them down, and they got to their game, their style of play, a little bit more in the second half of that game. I don't know how, if you're the Predators, you can try to get Carolina playing the way you played in the first period the whole time. As Chris Mason said earlier on the show, that is way easier said than done. But I think the formula in the first period, you were kind of going back and forth in terms of the physical play. I thought the Predators did a great job in the first period of shutting some things down at the blue line. They didn't give up a ton in terms of the middle of the ice, and that got away from them later in the game. The formula in the first period is going to have to be the formula the Predators follow if they're going to be able to compete in this series.
Right, and my question is, can you actually do that for a whole game against Carolina and in the playoffs? I do think that – I think this is where location it probably matters some. I mean, I think probably Carolina got some energy from 12,000 people and probably – the Preds will get the same when they're home. And I think that like those guys, a lot of these guys in this team who have been a part of many postseasons have talked about that in the past. I think it does matter to help the home team, especially in terms of energy. Because like in the third period, it looked like a much fresher team. Better, yes. Skill, doing what they do, making it very hard for the Preds to do what they want to do. But also they did. They looked fresher to me. So I don't know if the Preds can take that first period and duplicate it, but I would say that of the last 40 minutes of this game, a good 30 minutes of it were dominated by Carolina.
So the question is, did the game last night change the way you view this series? We had our poll question of the day yesterday where the winner on the poll question was the Predators winning the series in 6 or 7 games. I picked Carolina at 6, you picked Carolina at 7, Porth picked the Preds in 6. Did Game 1 change the way you view this series? That's our question. You can answer on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Sam text in, I don't think it changed my expectations. I had Carolina winning, but now I think we might be pressed to get more than one win in the series. The fact that they were able to camp out in our zone 5-on-5 and set up, and we couldn't even get set up on the power play, doesn't bode well. So, Joe, as you watched that game last night, did this change the way you view this series in terms of the Predators and their competitiveness in it?
Yeah, a little bit. And it's one game, and we've all seen playoff series and various sports that look one thing and then they go to something else. But it looked a lot like the first six games between these teams in the regular season to me. There was too much of last night's game that looked too much like the first six games of the regular season. It's just not a good matchup for the Preds. And I still think that there's value in what they did. Well, there's value in getting to the playoffs for one thing, but you know, there's value in what they did in the next to last regular season game with both of them with full lineups, and they at least had a full period of playing the way they want to play. But I came away from that series thinking that I was a little bit optimistic in saying Canes in seven.
Ryan Porth, did last night change the way you view this series? You had the Predators winning this in six. Heading into it, it is just one game, and we see this happen a lot in the playoffs. You have one game. If the Predators turn around and win in game two, all of a sudden it is mission accomplished. You've split in Carolina, and you're coming back home with a chance to go up 3-1 at that point. That's a lot easier said than done, obviously. Did last night's game change the way you view this series for the Predators?
Yeah, probably. I would say yes to that. I think the way that Carolina imposed their will in the final two periods was impressive on their part, and it was concerning on the Predators' part that, you know, there was all this talk about the physicality and them being able to, you know, hopefully punch Carolina in the mouth, and they tried their darndest to do that in the first period last night, and Carolina stood up to it. And as that game went along, Carolina looked to improve as each period unfolded. And if that's the version of Carolina that we're going to see every night against the Preds in this series, then, yeah, that does change the way I view this series.
It's not changed much for me. I mean, I had Carolina in six coming in. And look, I think the Predators are going to make some adjustments. I said it before, I think the lineup's going to look different heading into game two. And I think the Predators are going to find a way, especially, like, I think about game three. Like, I don't know what the response for the Predators is going to look like in game two. I think it's important that you come out in that first period and you try to get to your game as quickly as you can and force Carolina to react that way. But I do think, Joe, you brought up something that we've not talked a lot about today, and that is the crowd. I mean, there was 12,000 people in the building last night. It was a pretty obvious effect on Carolina. There was energy. That's pretty much all they talked about after the game last night, was having fans back in the building to that degree and how much of a difference they felt like that made. Well, that's going to be the same thing for the Predators coming up this weekend as well, starting on Friday in Game 3. There are going to be 12,000 people in the building, and they're going to be at home. And as good as the environments were coming down the stretch, and we talked about the environment at Pecorino's game to close out the regular season, the environment in the playoffs is a different animal, and it's going to be pretty special. So I'm holding tight to the Carolina in six. I think the Predators can find a way to get a couple of wins in this series. But I'll say this. I said, you know, kind of heading into this series, I would be surprised if the Predators won. I wouldn't be shocked. I thought it was going to take a great effort from UC Saros in this series to get it done. Right now, after that game last night, it could take a superhuman effort from UC Saros in this series to get it done. And that's a whole lot to ask from your goaltender.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. We've talked very little about Saros today. We've had a couple people on the text line. Someone asked, and I just texted them back, you know, if this was an indication that the layoff hurt Saros. We've gone through the one goal, and I think you astutely pointed out that maybe he overcommitted a little bit, or I guess maybe undercommitted thinking that a pass might be coming on the stall goal, but like the other three goals, I don't know what he's supposed to do.
Yeah.
And in fact, if he stops any of those, it's not superhuman. It's pure luck, right?
Yeah.
So Soros has to be great, but I don't even, he's not even in the equation right now in terms of what happened last night. And I'm not sure, like, the Preds have to get to the point for him to matter, to be in position to you know, to stand on his head and steal games. I mean, they've got to, and this is where I just, last night the kill was great, but the power play was so bad.
Yeah.
And that's been a big part of this turnaround, right? And I don't see how they come close if they don't start figuring out how to take advantage of those opportunities. It's just so hard to get things going against that team that when you get the man advantage, I mean, you've got to be in a position to take advantage of it. They couldn't set up last night. But I'd put Tolvanen in and try to set up and try to use what he brings to the table, because I think that the Preds are going to have to score, you know, they're going to have to score multiple goals in any game they win.
Well, and to that point, Chris on the text line points out, he says, I hear people texting and calling, complaining about the power play. But to me, it's no different than years past. The power play has never been good as it should be heading into the playoffs. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, you bring up a good point. The power play's not been great on the playoffs or in the playoffs for the Predators as of late. And we've seen how difficult it is to win that way. Like, you've got to have your power play at some point step in there and be a difference. And quite frankly, like, when the margin for error is as small as it is with the Predators in this specific series and this matchup against Carolina, like, you've got to win the special teams battle. That's something the Predators have got to win moving forward. Or I just don't think you give yourself that much of a chance in a series where I think it's pretty evident at this point, Carolina is the better team. They are the better team than the Predators. I don't think that's a surprise by saying that. The number one seed, they've been dominant all season long. They are the better team. To counteract that, you need great goaltending, and you need to win in some of these smaller areas of the game. You've got to win the special teams battle. And I just look at that power play, and even with Tolvanen in there, like, there's a lot of work to do on that power play just to set things up and get some movement. If you can't get that power play going, you just don't give yourself a chance in this series.
Yeah, that's how complete Carolina is. They're top five in both. I mean, they're good at everything, but the Preds' power play bottomed out 2 years ago.
Yep.
It was unwatchable 2 years ago. In fact, I don't even remember, was it especially bad against Arizona? I don't think it did a lot, but like, even then there was some progress. But this year there was a stretch where, to me, easily the best power play the Nashville Predators have consistently tried out since I've been around, and something that gave you hope that it could be different in this postseason. But you have to set up. You have to figure out a way to attack that kill because they're so aggressive. And then, to me, I think you want Tolvanen in that left circle.
Go to thegamenashville.com to check out Nashville's best deals. This week it's buy one, get one free tickets to Beach Bend Park and Splash Lagoon. Beach Bend Park is your ticket to summer fun. Double your fun and double your savings with buy one, get one admission. Two parks, two tickets for the price of one. Get yours now at thegamenashville.com. When we come back, we'll continue to get your thoughts on the Predators on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 1025 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. We've got some tickets to give away for a Nashville SC game coming up this Sunday against Austin FC. Be caller 4 or caller 5 at 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, and you can win some tickets to see Nashville SC take on Austin FC this Sunday coming up at Nissan Stadium, 615-737-1025. Joe, let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Kathleen texting in says, I can't believe after one game of a seven-game series, the sky is already falling. It was one game, and we have seen this team make adjustments. I will not write them off just yet. Calm down, all you Chicken Littles. This coming from Kathleen on the text line. I like it.
Come on, Kathleen. It's time to panic. This team will never win again. We know this. This is obvious. Look, in all seriousness, it's not time to panic, but I think last night we did see the difference in these teams. And to me, it looked a little too close to some of these other games we've seen between them.
I would agree. And that's something you've got to find a way to change if you're John Hines and the Predators moving forward. And we've talked about some lineup changes. Garland on the text line texting in says, Olivier and Yarncroak need to be out. I think with Yarncroak, or with Olivier, we have the size, skill, and grit in the corner. What do you think about him saying that Yarncroak has to be out? I'm sure your eyebrows just went up. I saw your reaction on your face. Man, immediately. One bad game and Yarncroak's out.
Yeah, absolutely. Unforgivable. Listen, now Yarncroak, he does a lot. He does a lot for the, he's on everything, you know. So he's not going to be out, but I will say in all seriousness, we've talked about it. I don't think that line's getting enough attention for its lack of impact. That can't happen again. And that was one of the most surprising things to me because they've been so effective, but they just that they have to take it. And I don't think they'll be, like, to see Mace's point earlier, I don't think it's going to get messed with. You've had such a stretch of success from those guys, and this is one game. I don't think you mess with something that's not new, that's been so good. But, boy, they have got to – if there's anything I would point to, like an entity, a line, a pairing, whatever, I'm pointing at that line saying you've got to be way better than this.
Coy in Clarksville says, history says to panic. You're 0-11 after losing game one in a series. That, as we talked about, I mean, that is a heck of a stat for this group. I don't get caught up in that stuff. I mean, that has nothing to do with this team, has nothing to do with this year. Now, do I think the chances are very high that they're going to come back and win this series? No, I don't. I mean, I took Carolina to win the series in six games before it even began, so I don't have a ton of confidence that the Predators are going to come back and win. But I don't think it's going to be because they're 0-11 after losing game one in the series. Like, eventually, that's going to stop at some point in this franchise. They're going to lose a game one somewhere along the way, and they're going to win a series. I don't know when it's going to happen, but those things that have happened in the past, I don't think have anything to do with what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, it's an interesting stat. And at some point, that'll end. They'll lose a first game and win the series. This is not the ideal streak breaker opportunity,
it is
I
not.
Would say. This is not the best possible streak breaker. It's interesting, too. I believe as a franchise, they are 7-2 when they win game one. I mean, I'm sure most franchises, there's a pretty big difference
sure.
if you look at the history of game one, win or loss. But that is pretty – I mean, that's kind of an amazing stat.
It is. I mean, look, I mean, eventually you've got to find a way to dig yourself out and – I mean, the Predators, they've been down 0-2 a ton in series along the way, like old series against Detroit, their first ever playoff series. They did it again in 0-8. They're down 0-2 to Pittsburgh in the Cup Final, and they found ways to come back and tie it 2-2. It's just a tough climb. Like, and that's what makes this next game so important. You get down 0-2, yeah, you're coming back home, and if you take care of business on home ice, it's 2-2, and it's a best of three after that. But if you're down 0-2 in a series, you got to win four out of the next five. I mean, that's really hard to do at that point.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, if the Preds figure a way to get game two, then we'll be right back to talking about their chances, and we'll be right back to talking about how the Canes have all this pressure as the favorite. You know, it's one game away. So that's the sunshiny Kathleen of view. You know, it's you put together one good performance. Maybe you get a break, like I think the Canes got on their first goal last night.
Yep.
And you can change everything.
Agreed. And I'm interested to see what the lineup looks like heading into game two. I do think there will be some changes. I'm going to call my shot right now. Eric Gudbranson will not be playing in game two. That's the shot I'm willing to call.
Well, I mean, if you had a say, he would never play in this league again. So, but I think you're probably going to be right.
By the way, have we mentioned all show the pick to click, you know, looking back on what happened on pick to click yesterday?
I was trying to avoid that.
Okay.
No.
I'm coming for you, Joe. Yeah, I'm coming for you.
Ryan Poore strikes again. What's that? You're up to five now. Yeah, up to five. Now you're still at seven. The listener's at seven. So Ports closed the gap a little bit. And I, at this point, I'm just so far gone with two. I have no chance.
Called shot. This thing is going to be tied after Friday night.
Yeah, I like it. Porth confident he's tying things up by the end of the week.
You better hope so.
Put that in your pipe and smoke it, Joe.
Yeah, I don't know that you're going to get a whole bunch more opportunities. So, hey, I welcome the challenge. I embrace it.
Hey, at some point, there's got to be a tiebreak.
You got to tell me about tonight, man, before the show's over.
All right, so I'm going to the Sounds game tonight. I'm taking some people from my Bible study group that I do. We're going to a Sounds game. And your boy is tossing out the first pitch tonight. I'm kind of nervous. Like, I've not thrown a baseball in a while. I've thrown some softballs. I've not thrown a baseball in a while. Now, I did used to be a high school pitcher. So I still have, like, somewhat level of confidence that I can put one over the plate. What I can't have happen is, like, a 50-cent moment or a Chase McCabe moment out there where I let one go and things just go sideways. Like, that, I can't have that happen tonight.
What was your pitching repertoire?
I had a nice little fastball, a knuckle curve, slider, and a change.
All right, man. You gotta try to throw that slider or knuckle curve for a strike. Come on, be bold. And also, if you ground one, you're with your Bible study group, no swearing. So remember,
well, that is true. I have to keep that in mind. I'll say this, though. Like, if it would be my luck to, like, throw a knuckle curve, and whoever's going to be catching this thing for me tonight doesn't know about it, and I, like, injure a Nashville Sound, they never let me back again. I can't have that happen either. So I think I'm gonna take the nice, cool, you know, 50-mile-an-hour fastball approach to it tonight.
Well, maybe when you throw it, you intend for it to be a fastball, but it's actually a curveball.
Maybe so. It get a little loft to
lends
it.
The shape of a curveball.
Well, hopefully there's going to be some video involved here to where we can see the results of this first pitch tonight.
I have been told there will be video.
There better be. There better be video.
We can grade this thing tomorrow on the show. There's a lot of pressure. I probably need to find me a baseball at some point this afternoon and just remember what it's like to throw.
Well, you can always be like Josh Heupel. You know, Josh Heupel threw out the first pitch a few weeks ago at the, you know, Vandy Tennessee game, and he missed the mark by quite a bit, but I think he was like, yeah, I was just brushing back the hitter, man.
That's right.
I mean,
you can
turn it into whatever sort of scenario you want.
I'll definitely have some excuses ready to go. That does it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Darren Donica Chase is coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.